Good afternoon and welcome to Art Speak Radio. This is Maria Vasquez Boyd with you every Wednesday, noon to 1 on 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. Art Speak Radio, yay! You know, this is always a terrific time of the year. We just love the fall. I love the fall. And one of the perks of the fall is that it's our very, one of our favorite volunteers here at the station, Simon Sharda. It's his birthday, so we want to give you a shout out and say thank you so much for all that you do, Simon, and happy birthday, kiddo. Today on the show, we've got Jenny Mendez, Sarah Heidschmiedler, Pablo Sunweza, Luke Trinka, and Suzanne Gladney. We're all going to talk about Dia Los Muertos, which is a huge celebration that's beginning to take place. People are becoming more aware of it here in the States, but it's a traditional celebration in Mexico, different parts of Mexico and all. So we're going to talk about Dia Los Muertos at the Nelson Atkins building on 45th and Oak. So I want to welcome my guests, Jenny Mendez and Sarah Heidschmiedler. Hello.
Hi.
They're so shy. They've been on many, many times. So first of all, we want to talk a little bit about Day of the Dead. Give our listeners a little bit of background on, about Day of the Dead.
yeah, I have lots to say. The Day of the Dead is one of my favorite times of the year. Such an amazing celebration of life and death. The Mexican people have got it together. The idea that life and death are as one, so one is not without the other. And being able to really have that understanding and comfortable about being not only the idea of celebration of life, but also death, remembering our loved ones that have passed on, and all the amazing traditions that go along with it and part of the celebration, and being able to see it firsthand with you, Maria, is always something that I'll treasure forever, and I hope to be able to go back to Mexico and see those beautiful things.
Well, and you know, because that special relationship with death in life, they're in partnership. They exist together and are celebrated at this time of the year, which is November 1st and November 2nd. And November 1st being All Saints Day, November 2nd being All Souls Day. And, you know, the different celebrations, the different ways people celebrate is through incense and food and flowers and, you know, the souls returning to Earth are represented by monarch butterflies, and so they carry the souls of the dead and deceased. So we mentioned that because at the Nelson Atkins Museum, we have a Day of the Dead altar installation, and I have to fully disclose that I was a part of this, but I say that because, you know, it's such a beautiful installation year after year, this being the sixth year. And so we have Sarah Heidschmiedler, who will talk about the dates, what you'll see, what you'll experience, and, you know, it's going to be a terrific family event, right, Sarah?
Yes, it will be. Our annual Day of the Dead Festival is on Sunday, November 6th, from 10 a.m. until 4 p.m.
And that's a new time because it became so popular that, oh, my gosh, how many visitors were there last year?
We had 5,000 visitors last year, and so we expanded the time and expanded the activities and the performances to just to accommodate for as many people as we can.
Yeah, because, you know, you have so much going on throughout that day. You know, in a short amount of time, there's so much going on. There's readings, there's music groups, there's different sort of dance performances and all that. What else will we see?
Well, we work with the Mexican consulate in Kansas City to bring a special performance group each year. And this year it's Cornisa 20. So they'll do three performances. And we're just excited to have them be a part of it. They're an urban performing arts group from Mexico. So that'll be one highlight. We'll also have lots of food. We'll have the tamale kitchen tamales. We'll have sugar skulls from a local bakery.
My mom started cooking today.
and then we'll have a lot of live music, too. We'll have Los Musicos and El Trio Aslan.
Terrific. Well, I want to go back to Cornisa 20, because what I have here is that they will have a special welcome at 12:30, and when Death arrives at his studio in exchange for more time, famous Mexican engraver and cartoonist Jose Guadalupe Posada offers to create a drawing of her so beautiful that she will be remembered for centuries to come. And, you know, Jenny and I have witnessed sort of those fun little plays, those little interactions in the street, because that's all a part of the celebration, right?
Yeah, pretty funny. So I'm excited to see this particular group that's going to be able to be here in Kansas City. And people really need to be open to the idea that it's not just the altar, it's not just the cemetery, it's not just the marigolds and the skeleton figures. That it's so much more. It's like all the time and detail that goes into it, the music, the food, the performances on the street, which I think is going to be great because it is funny, but so entertaining. And then also at the same time, you're learning, which is great that they have that, a little bit of everything that it sounds like they're going to be bringing when they come.
And we'll have artist demonstrations, and we'll have a print giveaway by some local printmakers in town, too. So it's inspiring to be able to work with so many talented and creative people in Kansas City, and it really is, it's a celebration. So the altar just opened today and will be on view through the 6th, and then it'll close after our festival on the 6th. So it's also a real celebration of creativity. We have 120 skulls on view, plus a special collaborative large skull by some really talented local artists and created at Maddie Rhodes. And so all of these skulls are decorated in such a variety of ways. There's imitation little monarch butterflies covering one, and then there's little paper mache skulls crowning the skull, decorated on another, and we've had so many different groups in town participate. It's really overwhelming to see all of that creativity by so many people in one spot in the altar, which is always a collaborative display. Mm-hmm. So that at Maddie Rhodes, you can go and see individual altar as created, and then at the Nelson Atkins, it's just a different experience of collaboration between lots of artists and
yeah,
groups.
Yeah, it's a community altar. It's a community installation that you're inviting your guests, visitors to the museum to participate, right?
Yes, we have little paper flowers, and we invite visitors to write a remembrance and leave it around the altar. So it's really something to see that those remembrances grow in number from today to November 6th.
Absolutely. If you just tuned into ArtSpeak Radio, I'm Maria Vasquez-Boyd. I'm talking to Jenny Mendez and Sarah Heitschmuller about Day of the Dead Altar at the Nelson Atkins Museum. And that festival is a family, fun-filled event that takes place Sunday, November 6th, from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., and that's at the Nelson Atkins Building at 4525 Oak. There's going to be so many different things going on throughout Kirkwood Hall, Atkins Auditorium, the Block Building, just so many different things that the website would give you a little bit more details. And what is the website, Sarah?
Yes, the website is nelson-atkins.org.
Yeah. So it's all happening November 6th, which is Sunday. And although that traditionally isn't Day of the Dead, it just happens to work best for that day in the community. And I want to talk to Jenny about the celebration of Dia de los Muertos at Maddie Rhodes, because it actually started early. It opened October 7th.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have a Calaca night parade and closing reception November 4th. So let's talk about that. What will people see at the Maddie Rhodes Center?
Sure. On on the actual night, the November the 4th, from 6 to 10, we'll have lots of different activities. But the main event will be the parade, and being able to have a night parade, working alongside Stone Lion Puppet Theater, community members, artists that would like to participate, families, car clubs, bike clubs, whoever wants to participate. We still would love to get more entries to be a part of the parade. Every year it's grown, so this is our third year of doing our parade, and it'll happen right around 7. When it starts to get dark, and it'll probably take about 30 minutes to travel. Beautiful. From Tony Aguirre Community Center through West Fenway and up in front of our gallery. Our plan is to have some music, so it becomes a street party afterwards, and people are already hanging out as it is, so we want them to enjoy the altars inside from many different community members that have created, and families that have done altars for their loved ones that have been up all the whole entire run of the exhibit so far, and will run until November the 12th. So we really want people to come for that, but then also to enjoy all the other activities like the parade, music, food, and just fun atmosphere.
Beautiful. And, you know, it's up a little bit longer again past Day of the Dead, because there's so many school groups and so many visitors to the Art Center that take the opportunity to not only learn about the celebration, but you also offer workshops. In fact, I know you've got a couple more left, which is happening Saturday, October 29th, and, well, two of them, actually. You want to talk about that?
Sure. We have glass, just a bottle-making Day of the Dead bottle making workshop using glitter and images, and it's just a lot of fun. We sell them in our gift shop. One of our artists there at our art center makes a lot of them, but we have volunteers that also come in. So we thought, why not ask people if they'd like to also decorate these bottles and have them on their own and be able to take them home and enjoy them. They can be used as vases or centerpieces. There's a ton of uses for them. And then the other one is a workshop that goes along with the parade and getting people to honor their loved ones and how they can make things glow in the dark or have lights on them to be able to be a part of our parade. So we look forward to this Saturday.
Yeah, and that's at Matty Rhodes Art Gallery at 919 West 17th Street, Kansas City, Missouri. And the website is MattyRhodes.org, and that's MittiRhodes.org, and that should be on the Facebook page for Art Speak Radio. So if anyone needs more information, there you go. So together, these two different organizations are celebrating something that is so vital and so important in the Latino community, right?
Yes, we love the idea of the Nelson celebrating Day of the Dead. We've been doing it for 18 years. The Nelson with the sixth year and us partnering with them. It's such an honor to be a part of such a grand place and them being able to really honor and respect, and it goes both ways.
Yeah.
Those are the type of partnerships that are most cherished and really honored. So we feel great to be a part of what's happening at the Nelson.
But I can honestly say that I've been celebrating Dia de los Muertos much longer. You said 18 years, and for the Nelson, it's been six
years.
Yes, I've been celebrating it much longer because I was actually born on Day of the Dead, November 2nd. You can send me a card or something. But, people are beginning to understand what this celebration is about. It is not the Mexican Halloween.
No.
And I think people are beginning to understand, well, it really isn't something that's macabre. It's something, that we honor our ancestors, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, very colorful and celebratory, and something to really to live life, by showing it through all the different ways that we can remember those that have passed on, but also how do we educate others on such an amazing celebration, keeping the tradition still alive.
Yeah. So we've got live music, we've got a book display and bookmark decorating, artist demonstrations, art activities. And Sarah, I should also mention that some of the art activities can be you know, kids that, who are preschoolers can participate, right?
Definitely. We have some masks that are special masks that you can decorate, and they look like sugar skulls, and we'll have temporary tattoos, and we do have a preschool story time, so we really have something for all ages on that Sunday.
Yeah. And again, it is Sunday, November 6th, from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. You know, the altar itself will be is placed in Kirkwood Hall, which is the plaza level. And that, would you suggest people get there a little bit early just for parking, or do they need to make reservations, or?
There aren't any reservations or tickets for this event, and yes, I would say getting there early is a great idea, although we do have free shuttle buses going to and from Kauffman Gardens and Kauffman Foundation nearby all day, so we'll have that, but getting there early is always a great idea.
And you can dance the cumbia to the acoustic stylings of Trio Aslan. They're always fun.
Yes.
You know, they always get people moving.
Yes.
You know, so it's just a family event that takes place, and it's probably one of the more popular and well attended events, right?
Definitely, it is, and we have several cultural festivals throughout the year at the museum, and we're really honored to be able to partner with organizations like Maddie Rhodes to put them on. It's really great to be involved in the community that way and reach out to new audiences.
Yeah, because when I was helping with the installation of the altar, I was so amazed how many different organizations really took place or took part in this for the 2016 installation for the altar. I mean, there were so many different organizations that participated, and I was happy to see that.
Yes, it's such a variety, and it's so neat to see skulls decorated by preschoolers at Plaza de Niños next to working artists in Kansas City, like Scribe, and then you go around, and then there's the skulls decorated by high schoolers at Alta Vista High School and J.C. Harmon High School, and it's really something to see the variety.
And I want to mention today, too, two of our guests that are joining us a little bit later in the program, Suzanne Gladney and Luke Trinka from the Migrant Farm Workers Project. They have the group of teens that they work with and out in eastern, I don't know if it's Jackson County, but anyway, in the eastern part of the city. Their teams participated with this installation, and that was, I think, truly eye-opening for all of them that worked with that. Again, Dia de los Muertos 2016, the 18th annual Kansas City tradition continues at Maddie Rhodes, www.maddierhodes.org, and at the Nelson, and that would be Sunday, November 6th. 10 o'clock to 4 o'clock p.m. And again, the website?
It's nelson-atkins.org.
Is there a number for people to call if they're not so techie on the website?
Yes, it's 816-751-1 and then ART is the phone number, and we have a Facebook page about the festival as well.
Yeah. Are you going to post some pictures?
Oh, yes.
Or are you just going to keep that a surprise?
No, we want to post some pictures.
Beautiful. Any last words? Anything that I left out? Not last words, but anything I left out?
No, just thanks for having us.
And you bet.
We want people to see all the events of Day of the Dead that are in town, especially at the Nelson and, of course, at Maddie Rhodes.
Absolutely. And Sarah?
No, thank you, Maria. We're happy to be a part of the citywide celebrations.
Beautiful. Well, thank you so much, Jenny Mendez and Sarah Heitschmiedler. And we're going to be right back with ArtSpeak Radio right after this. You're listening to ArtSpeak Radio. This is Maria Vasquez-Boyd, and I'm your host every Wednesday from noon to 1 on 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. Next up, we have Pablo Sanhueza, who is a Chilean-born and raised Latin percussionist and band leader. Now, since his arrival to Kansas City in 2003, he has distinguished himself as one of the foremost young exponents of Latin American and Caribbean music across the Midwest. And since 2005, Pablo has led Mucuza, a Kansas City-based eight-piece contemporary salsa ensemble, and his Latin jazz quintet, as well as freelancing for many other projects. And most recently, he is co-leading the Kansas City Latin Side All-Stars, a project in collaboration with the American Jazz Museum. So I want to welcome my friend Pablo to the stage, to the program.
Hi, Maria. How are you?
Hello, I'm fine. You have a lot going on. I want to say that I saw some photos of you recently appearing at the American Jazz Museum the other night. Do you want to talk about that?
Oh, thank you. Yes. Well, we've been working with the American Jazz Museum for 13 years now, since 2003. And under different names, we've been presenting salsa and Latin jazz since then. And our work has always been part of the cultural arts tradition. I came up in Kansas City. I came about playing for cultural parties for in the 90s. Latin American music existed mostly under cultural associations.
Right.
It was not in the clubs, right? So that experience helped shape my vision for what I wanted to do with this music. I wanted to reach the community and do it from a cultural arts perspective instead of entertainment.
Right.
You know, and those are two different approaches to music altogether.
Sure.
So I like to see myself in that world.
Well, and I think because of the music and because you have such a strong tie to educating people, it makes sense that you want them to understand that the music isn't just for the clubs. It isn't just, it's a way of life, right?
It's a way of life.
Yeah.
There is also a message of resilience, and also information on the traditional cultural aspects of Latin American people. And more so, it continues to be a living tradition because it speaks about what the Latino experience is in the United States.
Right.
The whole term salsa comes to put all these experiences together. Mm-hmm. All the salsa music is centered around Afro-Cuban music, the Caribbean experience.
Uh-huh.
Also permeates all Latin America. Mexico has a huge Caribbean area. All Central America and all Latin America are influenced for this music. And, its origin is Afro-Cuban and the Caribbean, but this music has outreached every corner. We remember that Pérez Prado
Yes. I mean, I grew up with him.
Yeah.
But, you know, do you think that in the last decade or so, do you think there's been a shift in understanding Latin American music, or is it a little bit more homogenized? What are your thoughts?
I think so. I think that we I was fortunate to grow up in the cultural arts world, which though in those years we didn't call it like that. It was just the culture.
It was
organically grown.
Yeah.
The first bands were hired by the cultural celebrations of the different associations of the countries. They had that the Independence Day, they would hire a band that would interpret the feeling of those celebrations. So in those parties, you will see all the people from all the other countries in Latin America. So if it was a Peruvian party, you will see the rest of the Colombians in there, and vice versa. The Chilean association was very active. My family was very active in it. Silvia Ramirez and Lucho. Lucho even was the director of KKFI in the 80s, early 80s.
Yeah.
And Silvia did the KCOR show for so long.
Yeah.
So they... Since when I moved to Kansas City, I came... They invited me to come when I finished high school. And I jumped basically into this scene that they were part of. And... That shaped my approach to music ever since then. And of course, there is a switch. Mm-hmm. When's Latin dance music, this what we call salsa today, reach the dance floor, reach Westport first at the McCoy's house in yeah. Venezuela.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah.
First,
yeah.
And then the Westport Beach Club.
Yeah.
Then a lot of people from outside the culture saw a money opportunity in this, which we always understood, but it wasn't never the point. Yeah. Of course, we were paying the bands who perform, and this is a natural understanding that artists need to get paid for what they do. But this opportunity was taken, and a lot of people from outside the culture came into it with financial interests, with business interests, not much cultural interest in it. And
not really understanding the culture aspect of the music itself.
Exactly. Yeah. And that started to, in a way, dilute the importance of this music. Mm. It wasn't any longer, it lost authenticity, and it lost... There were so many people on the side offering this.
Yeah.
DJs popping out. It wasn't no longer a cultural gathering. It became another commercial night. Like what has happened to most music. It happened to reggae music. It happened to hip-hop now.
You're right.
To most music, it goes into this. People from outside the culture, from where this music comes from, see in it a commercial opportunity.
Right.
And that generates a parallel reality that these realities end up coexisting in a way, but it's harder from us, from the cultural arts, to survive the business.
So how do you respond to that? Because, you know, you feel as though it's been diluted, and does it give you an opportunity to say, hey, now, wait a minute, to educate people and say, you know, that's great, enjoy the music, but...
Yeah.
Because I know as an educator... that would be an important component to helping people understand where it's coming from and what it's about and what it means.
Yeah, exactly. So, this generates opportunity to show a different side of this of music altogether. I think this whole American Idol culture permeated, because then we have an entire generation of people who's coming to music looking to become celebrities instead of furthering and contributing to the art form. And so then you have these two different approaches to music, the looking for fame and fortune or looking to be part of a cultural expression and understand a tradition and understand what else there is in there, you know, in the music, in the dances, what these dances mean, where they come from. And then it starts, the experience gets much richer for anybody involved in it. And now, not all is bad. We haven't lost total control over the representation of this music, but we have lost control of a big part of it.
Well, and it's become sort of a part of that pattern of assimilation too, hasn't it?
Yes.
And that, you know, I'm gonna. It's almost like sampling, right?
Yeah.
You know, but I do want to talk about your opportunity again to perform and to educate people. I know that tomorrow you're going to be at the Blue Room again, right?
Yes, we're tomorrow at the Blue Room. It's always a free admission show. American Jazz Museum has been a great supporter of our endeavors. So has been Nelson Atkins Museum, Kemper Museum, Kansas City Museum. It has been these institutions, the ones who have given us the support to stay alive as a cultural art endeavor. Yeah. The clubs are not. Very rarely a club comes forward. Also, there is no real Latin. There is not much Latino ownership of clubs in Kansas City. And the ones who are, they are focused on making that money. That's respect also. Yeah. You know.
Well, tomorrow, October 27th at 7 p.m., you'll be at the Blue Room at 1600 East 18th Street. Who are you performing with? Who are some of the people that you
we
will
have
be
a very interesting?
Is it just kind of whoever shows
band?
Up?
Yeah. Our bass player from Peru, a veteran of the Los Angeles salsa scene, is out of town for a couple months, so we are bringing a young player from the conservatory to fill in for him. And the band is a very interesting mixture of people from Dominican Republic, Chile, Peru, KCK Latinos born in Kansas City, yeah, and Kansas Cityans.
Beautiful.
And that's always been the mix. Ages too. We have people from in the early 20s, old, and the elder now in the band.
Because Peru is now
in Chile.
And I laugh because I laugh because you have such a baby face. I'm the elder. Well, and if you've just tuned in to ArtSpeak Radio, I'm Maria Vasquez Boy talking to my guest Pablo Sanhueza, who is a Latin percussionist band leader performing at the Blue Room at 1600 East 18th Street tomorrow at 7 o'clock. AmericanJazzMuseum.org is the website for more information. Tell me some of the people that you've performed with, because if you don't remember, I have a huge list here.
Oh, thank you so much. Well, after 20 years in music here in the U.S., yeah, you get to know a lot of people. My fondest memories is not so much the famous musicians, although I learned lots from them, but it has been to play with people who just come into the music. That has been more gratifying. I did get a lot from Bobby Watson, for example. That's somebody that I learned so much, and I worked under his direction for so many years in the Conservatory of Music, in the concert jazz ensemble. Mm-hmm. We travel Europe. We play Montreux Jazz Festival, Red Sea Jazz Festival, the Champs-Élysées in France. And we also travel all across the United States. Mm-hmm. We won the North Texas Jazz Festival once, a very prestigious jazz program there. So we did a lot, and he was very, very... he did big part of his career in New York City, so he's very familiar with Latin American music. And there, while living there, he learned a lot from work and learn a lot about Latin culture. So when I met him, he was very, very interested and very very welcoming to the influences that I could bring. And he always encouraged that. He didn't want me to assimilate. He wanted me to learn what they have to offer, but he encouraged me to keep my voice. He saw the value in it. So that's basically my background, you know, the cultural arts organization, then artists who are fully immersed in the culture. Yeah, many teachers also have come through Kansas City, invited by not-for-profit organizations like St. Mark's. St. Mark's brought Afro-Cuban master drummers a few years ago, several years ago in residence. You know, Felipe Garcia Villamil, a master, one of the National Endowment for the Arts people. And we have big Latin jazz stars here in Kansas City too that the American Jazz Museum has brought, like Dave Valentin, musical director for Tito Puente. I had the fortune to play with him too.
Wow, what an honor, huh?
Yes, so the American Jazz Museum, the Jazz Studies Program at UMKC, the cultural organizations, KKFI, these have been the pillars of culture, the cultural arts in Kansas City. Without you guys, we would be at the mercy of maybe basking in the corner, you know?
You know what? Will you promise to come back and perform?
Yes, I would love to.
Bring whomever you want.
Yeah, we can bring the full band here. We can definitely fit everybody here.
Yeah, because I want to see that, I'm going to see everyone dancing. I'm going to see everyone doing cumbias.
Yeah. We do all of that. Like cumbia, salsa, huayno. Especially now, I think it's important because salsa has been a commercially viable form of music for many years.
Yeah.
But there's very little innovation in it. It became a formula that everybody repeats, you know, and then you have two or three bands in town, they're all playing the same repertoire, the same covers, basically.
Yeah.
I think this is a time to innovate in salsa music and bring in other contemporary dance forms to it within the same root.
I love that.
Cumbia is huge, and cumbia and salsa music, you know, are natural allies if you know how to work with them, right? You know,
and you can't sit still when you listen to a cumbia.
And we know that cumbia is a big favorite of our people here in Kansas City. Latinos love it. So that's
what's not to love.
Yeah, what is not to love about it? And I think that we in salsa and jazz, we need to incorporate this music into it.
Absolutely.
We can't just walk away from it or not work with. This is the way to move this, what we call salsa, forward. The people who brought it up originally in New York early in the early 70s, because before that it was called Afro-Cuban music or Latin jazz or Q-bop.
Yeah.
But when they coined the term salsa in the 70s, they were innovating. They were incorporating, it wasn't just Afro-Cuban music anymore. They were incorporating everything that anybody who would come into the city who was a proficient musician, they will bring him in and incorporate that music into what we call salsa today.
We're going to bring you in again with your band. When. We'll look at our calendars.
Yeah.
But I want to thank you so much for coming in and talking about the music that is so rich and vital to the Latino culture.
Yes, we need it. We need it, and it's part of our... as much as we eat to keep the body alive, the music is to keep the soul and the mind alive, you know?
Beautiful. Thank you, my friend. October 27th, tomorrow, 7 o'clock p.m. at the Blue Room, you'll be performing at the American Jazz Museum at 1600 East 18th Street. Thanks so much for coming in this afternoon.
Thank you so much.
You bet. We're going to be right back with Art Speak Radio right after this. You're listening to Art Speak Radio. This is Maria Vasquez Boyd. Thank you so much for making us a priority this afternoon and tuning in on 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. Up next, we have Suzanne Gladney and Luke Trinka from the Migrant Farm Workers Assistance Fund, which is based here in Kansas City. In 1984, the Migrant Farm Workers Assistance Fund services were organized originally as part of the Migrant Farm Workers Project, which was a project of the Legal Aid of Western Missouri. It was established as a separate nonprofit in 1998, and it serves and empowers Missouri's migrant and seasonal farm workers. The staff meet with migrant farm workers when they first arrive at the orchards in late summer to determine their eligibility for public benefits and medical, dental services, and to complete school enrollment forms. From then until workers migrate elsewhere, the Migrant Farm Workers Assistance Fund seeks to meet critical needs and assist with a variety of health and other issues for those families that settle in the area. Ongoing assistance is provided. So welcome, my friends, Suzanne Gladney and Luke Trinka.
Thank you so much for having us.
Welcome to the program. So, you know, we have worked, again, at full disclosure, with the Latino Writers Collective, we have worked with you over the years and watched so many of the students, so many of the families change and shift and move, but we're really fortunate, too, to have seen some of these students stay and graduate and go on to college and all that. So give sort of an update what's happening with the migrant farm workers currently and with the organization.
We have served pretty much our whole time since 84, sort of two populations. One, the workers that are actually migratory, moving from place to place, picking fruits and vegetables. In this area, when they're in Missouri, they are in Lafayette County, about an hour east of Kansas City proper, and they're picking peaches and apples.
Mm-hmm.
And we serve them. We advocate for them. We're an advocacy organization, advocate for their rights and help them integrate into as much as they can in the short time they're here. Then there's also a permanent population of people who originally came as migrants and have stayed. Right now, in October, we are winding down the apple season. Pickers have left. Packing shed folks are still here, but leaving probably in the next few days.
Mm-hmm.
So we have been very involved with them for a very long time, providing a whole range of services. And we appreciate the Latino Writers coming out, along with lots of other organizations in Kansas City that help us come out and talk to our different groups, the teen group that Luke coordinates, as well as a women's group, come out and provide them with information about things going on in Kansas City that they may not have access to in the rural, very rural areas where they are when they're here and when they travel to other locations.
And you mentioned Luke in terms of working with the youth groups, and I had the privilege of working with him to decorate the skulls for the Nelson Atkins Museum installation for Dia Los Muertos. And Luke You're like a big brother to these kids. I mean, they rib you, they give you a hard time, and but they relate to you, and you're like a big brother. How did you get involved with the group?
Sure, yeah. I just want to first say thank you for having us.
You bet.
You know, I love public radio. I'm a huge advocate for it, so it's a real honor to be here. So I work alongside Suzanne at Migrant Farm Workers Assistance. My name is Luke Trinka, and I lead our youth leadership program, which we call TEC, which stands for the Teen Empowerment Collective. We meet every Tuesday in Waverly, Missouri, which is just about an hour and a half east of here. And, you know, this is just a space for migrant and year-round farm worker teens to come together, socialize, you know, experience a peer group, which is something they don't always have access to, and also participate in a really wide range of extracurricular activities. And I think my favorite encapsulation of the youth group was one of our younger members who's in sixth grade. He's actually new to the group this year. And we had a newer member come to one of our previous sessions, and she was asking, so what is this youth group? And he replies, you know, it's a space where kids come to have fun. And so it's like a really beautiful encapsulation of why we gather. And so that's just a bit about.
Yeah, and because the lives of a migrant farm worker, it's brutal. It's a tough life. I know that through friends of mine who are now adults that grew up, Miguel Morales,
right.
One of our friends, that has become a very successful writer, and so he writes a lot about that in his poetry and his short stories and that sort of thing. So
for the youth group that the TEC youth group that Luke coordinates, we're picking up these students at four different schools in different towns, different rural towns. And they live in many more than four different labor housing camps. And we're picking them up and bringing them to a common spot. Many of them, I mean, they don't go to the same school with each other. They don't live in the same area. And they really, the migrants especially, wouldn't have an opportunity to even know each other or even within 20 miles of each other unless we brought them together. And so some of these camps are pretty isolated. One of the young men that is involved with the group lives in a camp where he's the oldest and all the other kids are little, tiny little girls. So there's no other teen boy around. So these are just really really special times every week, two and a half hours of time. And the kids have fun. Sometimes they may not realize they're learning something at the same time,
sure.
Which is part of some of the sessions.
Yeah.
But the Sugar Skull session was really a special session. Dia de los Muertos is something that is important culturally, but many of these kids are growing up not knowing a whole lot about it. And so to be invited to have us be able to prepare six skulls that will be exhibited in the Nelson Atkins. Again, I don't know how much many of the students understand what the Nelson Atkins is and how special this is. But for them to be invited to prepare six skulls and for you, Maria, to help us put them together when we pick them up and realize how giant they are, we realize we better get some help in this project.
Yeah,
and I mean, this project was a collaboration in the fullest sense of that word. I mean, at many steps of the way, it was just like a really beautiful endeavor between Sarah from the Nelson Atkins, who supplied us with the skulls, you know, to Jenny, who provided us with some much-needed artistic inspiration, and to you, Maria, who came out and worked with the teens, you know, doing that creative kind of dirty work of decorating them and teaching them, you know, very patiently, you know, how to decorate these skulls. And it was a really special experience, not only for the staff, but also for the teens, too. So,
but, you know, I think that's what makes for a strong community is when we collaborate and we work in partnership with one another. You know, everyone benefits from that. And especially with Dia de los Muertos, I mean, it is about that.
Right.
You know, you're gathering the flowers and the candles, the incense and everything, and you're heading out to the cemeteries and all. What is happening, what's coming up for the teens and that will stay here and the rest of the families? What sort of needs are they experiencing right now? What's going on with them?
Well, this is the end. We're getting to the end of the season.
Right.
And so many of the teens will be moving on to new locations, many of the migrant teens. Some, about half of the group, will be teens that are staying. the ones who are moving on, it's a sad time for us. Mm-hmm. It's a sad mm-hmm. time for them. Many of them are going to places they've never been before. Places mm-hmm. where they don't know anyone. They may be out of school for a little while because it may take a while for their parent to mm-hmm. figure out what district they're in and how to enroll
sure.
them.
Sure.
Unless there's an organization like us that helps right away when they arrive, mm-hmm. like we do, which there's not in a lot of places. So it's just kind of a scary time. It's a sad time. A lot of them are being in touch with Luke and the other staff that are involved with the teen group. We prepared some photo boards for them of some photos of this time together
okay.
and giving other students yeah. and staff a chance to write notes to them so they could carry those along. They also are often traveling in very cramped vehicles where they're limited with what they allowed to take.
Mm-hmm.
So having something that has some pictures and some meaning to them is important. For the ones who are staying, we're serving families that are every single one of them below the federal poverty level,
mm-hmm.
and many of them way, way, way below the federal poverty level. So we have lots and lots of needs all the time for pretty simple things.
Now, for our listeners that are hearing you and asking themselves, what can I do? What information, what website would you be able to share with us?
We have a website. It's www.migrantfarmworkers.com. AF for Assistance Fund .org. So migrantfarmworkersaf.org. There's a list of needs there. Just very simple things. T-shirts,
basic
clothes, mm-hmm. baseball caps, pickers, use caps. They usually have several of them because to wear during the day when they're
mm-hmm.
picking,
mm-hmm.
To keep sun out of their eyes. beans, pinto beans, mm. dry pinto beans,
wow.
dry white rice.
And these are
lots
the people,
of beans and rice.
These are the people that are providing the food, or I shouldn't say provide the food, but they're gathering the food for us as this nation, and they themselves need food
right.
for their families.
It's one of the ironies of migrant farm workers is that's what they do all year long, is pick food for people. But, of course, you can't live on apples alone or peaches
right.
alone
right.
or whatever you happen to be picking.
Right.
And for example, in the communities we're serving in Lafayette County, very few of them live actually in town.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
if you're in Waverly, for either direction, you're more than 20 miles from a grocery store.
Yeah.
So we have food distribution. I mean, we have lots and lots of services. So that's one of the things. And Luke can talk about kind of the needs of the teen group. We have needs there, too.
Sure, yeah, we definitely do. And, I mean, even beyond some of those needs are just people who would be willing to spend, an afternoon with us on Tuesdays out in Waverly, Missouri. It's great to have people like Maria come in who are just really positive community members to just, give these kids just some inspiration and... we're always looking for, creative individuals, people, professionals within the Kansas City area to come out and just, explain to us what they do and to kind of, generate and inspire these young teens. It's, something that is really valued in our group. So.
Well, I appreciate that. That's very sweet of you. Thank you, mm-hmm. Luke. But, what I have gathered in my years with the groups, with the teen groups, they're not any different than any of the other kids that are in the neighborhoods running and throwing and playing and yelling and all that. And they have their, their heartbreaks and their loves and that sort of thing. And they're just really not any different with exception of they work and they work very hard.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one of the big differences is because they are constantly on the move and even the ones who are year-round are in these tiny towns, they don't have the exposure to lots of different professions
mm-hmm.
and different
yeah.
kinds of work. And what what it took to get there. So how important it is staying in school, how important it is to think about not necessarily college, but some sort of vocational aspiration.
Mm-hmm.
Many of them don't know many people beyond teachers in school or other people who do farm work. And so just it's hard to think of yourself in terms of what you might be doing if you don't, if you've never met anyone who does something like that. So really anyone who comes out, we ask them to talk a little bit about just what they do in their job and how they got there.
Well, and you do have some success stories because, you know, people like Miguel Morales, our friend Miguel, who grew up as a migrant farm worker and worked the fields for many years until his father ended up getting a job in a meatpacking factory, and that sort of thing, and that sort of shifted things for him. But if you want to give the website one more time, and then our listeners can maybe find out some more about the migrant farm workers.
www.migrantfarmworkers, that's one word altogether, farmworkers, AF for assistancefund.org. And we do have lots of success stories, kids that have graduated, kids who are in college.
We love that.
Yeah,
everyone loves, you know, a good ending, and we should all have good endings, right?
Yes.
Indeed.
And with that, that was a nice segue. I'm going to have to say thank you, Suzanne Gladney and Luke Trinka. Thank you. On behalf of the Migrant Farm Workers Assistant Fund, you do a terrific job. So very valuable, much needed in the community. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Yeah.
You bet. I also want to thank my other guests, Pablo Sanhueza, Jenny Mendez, Sarah Heitschmiedler, again, Luke Trinka, and Suzanne Gladney. And I want to thank you, listeners, for tuning in to 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio, or listening to us online. Next week, November 2nd, my birthday, I will have Maria Teran on tap, and also along Rodolfo Moran. Miguel Morales, Chato Villalobos, and Tim York will perform live here in the studio. Stay tuned next for Jeff Harshbarger, Jazz in the Afternoon. And thank you all so much for tuning in this afternoon. Be sure to like us on Facebook because, you know what, I really like you. And I'm going to say it with me. Honey, I'm coming home.